What's up, everybody? You're listening to the What's On Your Mind podcast, where we give you the latest news and thoughts on sports news and pop culture for the millions. I'm your host, as always, Dre Emerson, and welcome back to the show. On today's pod, we're going to be talking the NBA playoffs with my boy Xavier. There's some interesting storylines going on there. Both key players from last year's NBA Finals, K-Midpack and Devin Booker, are out for the foreseeable future, which is a big blow to both Phoenix and Milwaukee. Ben Simmons is reported to be making his return in Game 4 with Brooklyn down 0-2. And Def Moore there to get into. We also discussed the NBA awards. Marcus Smart recently received the Defensive Player of the Year award. And we'll see where the other ones shake out soon, but we're going to give our takes on that. Also, later on, I got Sean to give our instant reactions to the Thor Love and Thunder trailer that came out finally after someone extorted Kevin Feige to get it. So, knowing us, we'll get into that and we'll spin into some more MCU talk, and we will talk about Batman because he has finally seen it. Let's go.
Green, he angles up toward the rim, he gives her a beat, he'll turn, got off the shot and hit it. Oh my, they're going to count the bucket. But review.
Celtics need to become a legit contender again.
Smart fakes inside. Tatum spins.
It is the Jimmy Butler Show tonight in South Florida.
All right, what's up, Xavier? How you doing, man?
I'm all good. How you feeling, Dre?
Chilling. It's a beautiful Friday. We got some playoff games today. Can't wait. Probably going to hit a couple bars, go watch them with some friends. What about you?
Yeah, I might head out tonight too. Feeling some boneless wings. Actually, maybe some bone-in wings with that on the side. Nice little lemon pepper with my basketball game tonight, so I'm feeling good.
Are you bone-in or boneless?
I'm both. It just depends on the mood. Like, some days I just want some, break them down with the fork, eat some boneless wings. Other times I already want to get down into it, get some drums, get some flats.
Yeah.
Get different mixtures, go all the way with it.
I had some wings last night, punished me. I think I had it around like lunchtime. I was punished like this whole night. Like, wings immediately fills me up now.
Just the wings itself?
Yeah. It was like a wings and fried combo, but that thing it punished me for the rest of the day.
See, that's how you knew they were bomb.
Watching that Denver game last night, Warriors in and out of sleep. I'm like, man, I'm trying to stay up. I'm praying they don't go into overtime because I'm just like, man, I'm out of here. But getting into it. So this is Xavier's first time on the show and hopefully not the last. You know, I got him on to talk the NBA playoffs, some interesting series going on there, and some big news from the league with some key players. So before we get into it, Xavier, you want to properly introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yes, what's going on, everyone? I'm Xavier Hunter. I'm running social coordinator at Sports Business Journal. You can catch me on whatyouexpect.com for any updates and blogs for anything sports, music, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But pleasure to be on the show today with my man, Dre.
Oh, yeah. All right, so let's just, we can start with the games from last night. So T-Wolves, Grizzlies, epic choke job by the Wolves last night, letting the Grizzlies come back from down 26 in a game where Ja played horrible. I mean, the Grizzlies really overcame like two big leads in the game. The last one, they was like on the 50-16 point run. Desmond Bane lit them up. This game had to feel like a gut punch. And initially, I picked the Wolves in six. I was confident in them, especially with that play-in. I think that was a great game for them and then how they played in game one. But now – I don't know. I just feel like that was a kill shot by the Grizzlies. What you think?
Nah, for sure. I just watched the Timberwolves lose the whole series because as more than a gut punch, that's really just a whole downer altogether. Yeah. It's one thing you blow a 20-point lead, playoff, okay, all right, got the next one, but you blew two 20-point leads in that game. And this is like something that really needs to be emphasized. They didn't even call a timeout on the second run.
Nope.
Not a single timeout was called the whole time as the Grizzlies were coming back, as they were tying the ball game, as they even got the lead. They didn't call a single timeout. Like, something needed to change there.
Yeah, no, it was bad. I really don't get what the coaches was thinking with that. They just let it go on. And it's not like I feel like the Grizzlies was doing anything, like, really too crazy to get him back in the game. It was just like a slow, like just, you know, just consistently chipping away, and Grizzlies just making mistake after mistake. I mean, like Cat has just been completely off of this series, just indecisive, hacking players, whining about it. It's a rough series.
Yeah, it's super rough. I don't understand how potentially I feel like he was on my all-NBA ballot because he bought out this year. I don't understand how a potential all-NBA player candidate only attempts four shots in the game. Like, it's like four. Like, you're supposed to be this all-star player, arguably the greatest big man shooter
from your playing what he says.
Yeah, literally from what he said, you're the greatest big man ever, big man shooter, and you take four shot attempts. It was more crazy. I guess he tried to one-up Rudy Gobert on the whole I don't got to shoot the ball to win thing, but Rudy Gobert barely gets the ball anyway. So what are you talking about right now?
Yeah, nah, it was bad. All y'all, just all around bad performance from everyone. And then, like, when the game started, and just to see how, like, great they was playing with energy, because it was completely flipped from game two. Game three, and then I just really just don't get how they couldn't get any type of offense. Like, I felt bad for Malik Beasley because his field goal percentage was probably awful by the end of the game from Cat and D'Lo holding the ball to like 4 seconds left in the shot clock and just passing it to him in the corners for like cornered threes when he's like super contested. I'm just like, this team, the whole team IQ was just horrible.
Yeah, and it's weird because given the fact that you do have a few players on the roster, granted, it's not much, but you do have those couple of key players that have playoff experience. We see Patrick Beverly, who's never missed the playoffs in his career. D'Angelo Russell has a couple playoff series under his belt when he was back with the Nets. Like, it's somewhat enough. And Cat was on that 2018 team when Jimmy Butler, when they made the playoffs. So, I'm not saying it's no excuse, but it's obviously no excuse for just a letdown like that to happen. Like, there's somebody at some point needed to check somebody. Check the coach, check one of the players, check one of your guys. Like, someone had to do something, and ultimately nobody stepped up to the plate.
Yeah, I think, you know, just thinking about, like, the Timberwolves franchise, and if KG was there, they needed something like that. Like, I tongue-in-cheeks tweeted that Pat Bev was, like, he changed the culture of the Wolves like CP did for the Suns. And he kind of did. Like, he was kind of like, in every game they won, like, he was, like, deliver a big boost. But, like, this game, like, he was just – he think he was jolly, like, trying to skip through the lane, trying to go against – Jaren Jackson Jr., when you know he leads the leagues in blocks. We heard the soundbite of Kat saying this is a blocking team. Like, I just don't get what happened. Like, the offense just completely just went away. And Kat is just, it looks bad for him. He had a great season, but he was doing all this talking, and he was backing it up. They had a great season and made it into the playoffs, but I don't know. Like, is there any way that you think they can get back into the series?
Well, to their favor, the series is only 2-1, and they do have another home game. So I feel like, again, both teams drawing blood on each other's home court evens it out. But they can't go back to Memphis down 3-1.
Yeah, it basically wraps up for that.
Yeah, no, the way that energy in that crowd is right now, going down 3-1, you can't do that. You already drew – like, it's already granted you drew first blood, home court advantage, but drop it the next three, no, you can't come back off of that.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to the next game, Warriors and Nuggets. So I don't know how you feel about this one, but I feel like this is pretty much a, you know, foregone conclusion for the Warriors. Not, you know, not if, just but when. Too much firepower, 3G, Splash Bros, whatever you want to call them. They got some of the best shooting right now in the playoffs. And any of those three, and Klay, Steph, and Jordan Poole can, you know, catch fire at any time. Then you add players like Draymond, Wiggins, Otto Porter, Looney, who's giving you like a steady presence down low. And it's just too much for the Nuggets, who are without like Michael Porter Jr., Jamal Murray. Like, just they don't have no help for Joker. And Aaron Gordon, like, I hate to say this, but he just sucks. And just the things he was doing last night, I'm just like, dude, like, that play at the end of the game when it was like, what, 2 or 4 point game? And I don't know what he did. He just completely just ran over stuff. Like, he tried to back him down, just completely ran him over. It was just like, oh, my God.
And just, those weren't the plays where you needed that veteran presence. Like, remember, they had Paul Millsap a couple years ago. Yeah. Like, he'd like, okay, you want to take the post, go after him type of thing, but it's a way to go after it. And especially in a crucial game like that, those small type of turnovers – or the ones that ultimately cost you the game.
Yeah, and then just to waste a performance like that from Joker is just if they could have won this game, it could have gave them hope. I still would have picked the Warriors, but just to waste that performance from Joker, it's just got to be tough for that team.
Yeah, but that's ultimately been a summary of the whole season. Because if you watch Nuggets games closely, you will realize they really go through stretches of games to where Jamal Murray takes over, whether it's not even from a score perspective, but even just from a playmaker's perspective, where having that extra body to facilitate the ball, having that extra body to just penetrate the paint and kick out or do dump offs. Like, Jamal Murray's presence is absolutely needed, and that's why Lucas is always carrying a load. That's why you see Jokic having these big 40-15 games, because the ball is in his hands, because he's the only person that can distribute the ball.
Yeah. Question, because I've been seeing this all over NBA Twitter now. If Jokic, and we're going to get into the NBA awards later, but if Jokic don't manage to pull, like, to get them a game, do you feel like that should hurt his MVP case?
No, because MVP should have been announced by now. Because at the end of the day, the MVP is a regular season award. And it kind of baffles me sometimes, where it's like, okay, we give them the MVP and they stink it up in the playoffs, and it's like, oh, he shouldn't have been MVP. But let's go back and run those tweets on where all season long you're saying how this person should have been MVP the whole time. So, like, right, is it Uchiwali or is it one Mike? But I feel like if Jokic wins MVP and they wind up getting swept, I don't see anything with it, because it fits your narrative on why you voted for Jokic in the first place. Yeah. Quote unquote, he has no help. Quote unquote, he's carrying the team by himself. So if he's doing that and he loses to ultimately a better team, we know the Warriors are a better team from top to bottom.
Different level right now.
He shouldn't be faulted for that. If, again, your narrative is that he has no help.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. So looking ahead with this Warriors team, just as like how great like their core is playing right now, do you see this team, like looking ahead, do you see this team possibly going on a finals run?
I actually have them in the finals. Ooh. So that's my team coming out the West. Will they win the championship? I'm not 100% sure. I had Brooklyn come out the East, and I'm low-key regretting those words right now, down 2-0, but – or is it 3-0? Down 2-0, 3-0?
But, yeah, 2-0, 2-0.
But we'll see about that later. But ultimately, I think Golden State's the best team in the West. I think when they had that slump where Curry got hurt and they was missing a few guys, they were in that little slump towards the end of the season, it was looking a little funny. But ultimately, this is the best roster from top to bottom. And they still don't have James Wiseman, which I'm highly on. I feel like they should incorporate Wiseman in their playoff rotation, but that's a different conversation. But
yeah. Well, so before the playoffs started, I had the Mavericks going to the finals.
Wow.
I think with the shape of the West, with it just being like it kind of being weak, I don't think there's anyone in the playoffs on the West side that can guard Luka, you know, as good as Kawhi Leonard did. Like, he was the Luka stopper. He can, you know, Sicily got him all back-to-back years. Right now, I don't see no team that can put together, you know, a game plan just to stop what a Luka Mavs would have did. Like, if he was playing right now for the Jazz, and we'll get into all of this, you know, but just real quick, I just think that Luka would have just dominated the field.
It's crazy to me. I see your point, because especially look at the playoff season, they're in a 4-5 matchup, so ultimately they'll probably face a Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
And the way how that's going right now, if Booker's out for a couple of weeks and he doesn't come back 100%, or God forbid Chris Paul gets hurt, because, you know, that's always a thing that happens.
That's playoffs, right there.
You can easily make a case on Dallas being the Western Conference Finals and possibly winning that series. So I see your point. I see where you're going with this.
I love Luka. He's one of my favorite players. And like I said, we'll touch more on, you know, the Mavericks when we get to that. But let's go to the money series that everyone's, you know, got eyes on. Everyone's talking about Nets and Celtics. So this has, you know, been my favorite series so far. I feel like it's been the most competitive. You got one of the the best teams in NBA history with the Celtics, probably one of the better teams in the past couple of years on both ends. And they got like a real shot of actually going and winning the NBA championship, you know, back in those years with Rookie Tatum. And, you know, when was the IT on that team?
Yeah, IT was on that team.
Yeah, you know, you still have Bron there. So it was like, you know, you think you can, but it's still big Bron. But this, it looks kind of wide open for the Celtics, so especially on the East. So I think it's a great matchup. You got KD and Kyrie. Both have been playing like, well, Kyrie had a good game one, but then game two was just awful for those two. I think whoever comes out of this series is going to the finals.
And ultimately so, because when you think about it, this is probably the most even matchup for a first round that we got that's not really a 4-5 matchup. So when you have two great teams like that, I can easily see how the winner of this might be just Eastern Conference winner. Granted, they're still going to probably get by Milwaukee the next round. They're going to get by possibly Philadelphia or Miami, which is still no easy feat at all. But these two teams can easily just run through the East if they want to.
Yeah, I know you said you got the Nets. I still got faith in the Nets. They were my finals pick. Like, so my finals pick was Mavs and Nets. I'm holding on to hope to both of those just with how Mavericks doing against the Jazz right now. And I'm still believing KD and Kyrie. So I believe as a Nets fans, you can look at this two different ways. Celtics defend a home court and you can turn this around at home, or you can just be completely demoralized after losing two like heartbreakers. And they were definitely bad losses. Game one was nip and tuck. Celtics, you know, they did good on the boards. I feel like the only real big difference from that game was a big third quarter from Marcus Smart to start it off. And it got them that lead, but it was offset by Kyrie's fourth quarter. And then they just lost on a buzz beater. That's tough. But then to follow up and lose after leading big in that game and the fashion they did, like Kyrie and KD couldn't, you know, get anything going. It's definitely demoralizing. It's definitely bad losses. How do you feel about those? And do you think the Nets can come back in this?
Well, the Nets can for sure come back. They're going to make this a series. I don't see them going out without at least two wins if they happen to lose. But I never seen Kevin Durant stink it up that bad since like the young Thunder days, honestly. Like, it wasn't the fact that he was taking bad shots neither, too.
Yeah. It was like, just the way the game plan, the defense they got on him, it's just like, God, like they completely, I don't want to say he shook, but he shook, you know, like it was looking shaky for him. Like his decision making, he's just playing with the ball willy-nilly. Like I think it was a perk that said it on TV. Like he just looked like he's just, or one of the broadcasters at the time. He just looked like he thinks he's on one-on-one. He thinks no one else is there. But the Celtics, they're like doubling, tripling him, and they're like ripping him like every time. It's just like, I don't get why he hasn't been able to make an adjustment yet, because I've seen him like be able to be more than just score. Like, I believe he's a true all-around player. Like, I've seen him have big assist games. He did it in the playoffs last year. I just don't get why he hasn't been able to make the adjustments.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you could see the Celtics were like prepping him, or like at least preparing to get to those type of sets. Cause you've seen in game one where they didn't double him often, but they show shades of sneaking up the double. They show shades of like them switching on to KD at different times. Like you see those things to where now game two, boom, okay, we're really putting them to action. So now I'm interested to see how does the Celtics adjust knowing that KD's aware of their one double or triple team now. So that makes me wonder who else are going to try to force a step up, because you can't really force Steph Curry to beat you, because if Steph gets hot, there's no coming back. You can't force Kyrie to beat you because when Kyrie gets hot. So I wonder who are the Celtics going to make be that guy to step up? We've seen it with Nick, or is it going to be Nick Claxton? Dominate the paint, Bruce Brown, he's going to make some shots. Is Drummond going to have to crash the boards? Like, they're going to need that one person to beat them, because you can live with KD and Kyrie being KD and Kyrie. But when the other guys get hot, that's when things starts going to the fan.
Yeah, and then speaking of that, like, you know, shout out to Goran Dragic because he has been absolutely hooping in both games. Like, just his – he's playing with total confidence. It's like he's in playoff mode. He's been here before. He knows what to do in these moments. He knows how to go get a bucket. They just – especially in these moments when the games get close, they just need to be better about just not letting the ball just stick with KD and Kyrie. They got to keep on doing it. But speaking to, like how you said with the adjustments, and this news came out today, Robert Williams is going to be back for game three tomorrow.
That's huge. That's huge.
It's like they keep switching things up. And I think they knew all along they wanted to play him in game three. Because like you said, they gave the shades. Then they fully went into it. Now they got a whole different element. One of the key anchors to their defense coming back. So it's just like adjustment, adjustment, adjustment. What's Steve Nash going to do? Who's been getting like out-coached like crazy? It's been a bad series for Steve Nash.
Yeah, it makes me wonder too, like what conversations were going on. Like, does he have the locker room, or the locker room is against him, or is he calling plays and just something not working? Like, I wonder what's going on in the strategies, because you can't just let KD and Kyrie just do their thing and win you the game, obviously.
Yeah, it's just like, it's no move. It's like no players are being drawn up. Nothing is going on, especially in those close moments. Like that game, game one, when Kyrie just held the ball for like 20 seconds at a shot clock and gave it to KD. It was just like, how you got to draw something up right there. And you got to use your timeouts.
Yeah. Somebody got to set a back screen. Somebody has to cut. Somebody has to do something. And it makes me wonder, are they just going through the storm till Ben Simmons comes back? Because he's supposed to come back within the game three to four range now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no official word yet, at least. But if you're playing on Ben Simmons coming back, you really got to run plays for this guy, because you can't just have Ben Simmons sit in the corner, KD, Kyrie doing the ISO and just dump it off. Like, no, like you need Simmons to either move with or without the ball so he can set up not only a layup for himself, hopefully he takes it, or
yes,
take it back out to somebody on a three-pointer.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, just keeping on with Ben Simmons, what impact do you think he can have on this series? Say he comes back three or four. I think when I watch Bruce Brown play, I think that could be the role for Ben Simmons. Like, he can be in the paint, you know, making the plays. Either you go up with it or you're kicking it out to someone. You can be the force down there. Definitely can be a force in transition. You know, he's one of the best at getting players three-point shots. So, and that's exactly what this team needs. His length, his defensive, like, he don't need to do anything crazy. But do you think everyone's just overreacting to it and he's just not going to have no real crazy impact at all? Like, what's your level with Ben Simmons?
The optimistic in me says that he's been ready to play all season.
I think so, too.
Minus the whole, like, back injury thing, because he's been having back issues. So I think he's always been game ready. But that's the optimistic person in me. But the realistic view side I have is where you can't skip all 82 games and expect to come back and to play playoff basketball, because that's a different beast.
Yeah.
That's ultimately where it comes down to. If he were to came back, let's say the final month or so into the season, to get yourself warmed up, playing at game speed, that way, okay, by playoff time, you're set, he would have had a huge impact. But I feel like if Brooklyn's able to get Simmons back and come back out of this Celtics series, next round we'll truly see Simmons' impact.
Yeah, for sure. I'm still trusting them. I think it's been, like I said, nip and tuck series. Not too much difference between these two teams. It's been coming down to the wire. If Ben Simmons can literally just get them anything, any type of boost, create any more type of three-point opportunities for Patty Mills, Goran, Seth Curry, like, that's all they need. And then he already has the chemistry, at least with Drummond a little bit. And, well, I don't know. I don't think Drummond was on that team last year, but at least with Seth, though, for sure. So,
yeah, I feel like they have all the guys that they have.
Yeah.
I think it's just more so of, can they cohesively think together long enough?
In time, in the midst of a middle of a series.
Yeah, no, it's going to get ugly before it gets beautiful. But let's hope and pray that that ugly isn't too ugly to where they're out the first round.
Yeah, for sure. Another question before we move on to the next series. What's your feeling on Jason Tatum? Is he a top 10 player in the NBA right now? Because he's just been on a different level. He's two-way. He's the way he's guarding Kevin Durant. He's taking the matchup. He got an official meme now. He's locked in. He's locked into the series. What's your level on him?
I was always high on Jason Tatum. I think what makes me put him just like that second tier under everyone else was just more so of his early season play. Like, I don't know if you've seen the meme of like where they was having like different timelines for different players. Remember they had the Westbrook timeline to where he's trash me get in, then he carries the team in the playoffs. Now he's like the triple double god. Or like they had a similar one with Jason Tatum where he struggles in the beginning, then around January, February,
he catches
fire. And that's exactly what happened this season. As far as him being a top 10 player, he might be top 10 player in the playoffs. But overall, top 10 player in the NBA, he might be top 15 for sure.
Okay. We can pin it at borderline. I'm super high on Jason Tatum. I love him. Definitely one of my bag of players. So, like I said, out of these two teams, one of them going to the finals.
Yeah, for sure. It's just I hate rooting for Celtics players, but Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are my only exceptions to Celtics players I'll root for.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so next series, we got my Bulls going against the Bucks. Now, this series got a whole lot of interest in. It's tied at one piece. Your go-to money player in the clutch and Chris Middleton, he's out for the foreseeable future with that MLC sprain. Before the injury, I had the Bucks in the sweep. Like, it's just been bad for the Bulls against the good teams. Like, they beat up on the sorry teams, but lose all the time in the same type of fashion against the good teams. I think they got like one win against a good team, and it just looks bad for them. DeRozan literally had to have a 40-point game for them to win that, still, even with Chris Middleton out. So I just don't – even with Chris Middleton out, I don't know how the series is going to turn out, but it does get interesting. If DeRozan can keep up that level of play, it could be a series.
For sure. And it's scary because, again, the Bulls have two guys that can give you 30 a night easily. It's just a matter – if they actually drop 30 a night.
Yeah, if they want to, like, the shot selection just got to be better. Like, that Zach LaVine shot in game one when the game was close, and I just, like, immediately turned off the TV.
Yeah, when he dropped that deep three, when it was, like, 15 seconds left, I was like, come on, bro, you got to do better.
I was like, he's not a for-real player. He's not a for-real player right now. But go ahead with what you was about to say.
No, it was pretty much piggybacking off of that. I feel like what Zach LaVine learned in the Olympics is different from what he's doing in the playoffs. Because I think in the Olympics, you have multiple guys that are 30-point scorers or all-stars, NBA caliber players, but now you're being looked upon as that guy. So compared to when he was in the Olympics, he was being that spot-up shooter or that guy going off backdoor cuts and getting to the lane where he's getting his shots off, but at a more efficient rate to where he doesn't need to dribble the ball.
Yeah.
Compared that to the playoffs, now he's pretty much their secondary ball handler if you count DeRozan. So going with that, I feel like it's all come through time. It's just growing pains with him. The more times he gets those playoffs experience, get that playoff atmosphere in him, he's going to make those smarter decisions. How's that going to look moving forward? I'm not sure. I'm hoping he gets a big game to really put his mark into the series, and maybe they might get another win and still go up 2-1. But I don't feel like they have enough to beat Milwaukee four times.
So you don't think the Chris Middleton injury really affects this team right now, at least in this series?
In this series, no. Because next series, you're looking at potential facing either Brooklyn or Boston. Yeah. And that's where really you're going to need Middleton's presence on the defensive end, at least, at minimum on the defensive end.
Man, it's tough, man. I really want the Bulls to, when I saw they drew the Bucks, I said, ah, damn, like this, like they literally get beat down by the Bucks. And it's just Vucevic, like, he's just such a disappointment. Like, he's been disappointment really all season. It's different being on a team where you got expectations, you expected to be do good. And you would think that, you know, he will excel in a team where you got DeRozan and LaVine, you know, taking majority of spotlight, the game plan on defense, but it's different. You're not on the Magic no more.
Yeah, I feel like with Vucevic, I feel like the Bulls don't space the floor out enough to fit his style. Because similar to where he was in Orlando, where they was pretty much just running and gunning in a way, or they just shooting up threes like nothing. So Vucevic was able to be that inside-outside scorer. Here, I think they're relying him more on the post, but at the same time, they don't have enough guys to space out the floor to where Vucevic can hit those mid-range jumpers, can hit those threes on a consistent basis.
Yeah. It's going to be tough. Well, series tied at 1-1. They got the game tonight on ABC. Who you got in game three?
Game three, I feel like Giannis is going to go off.
Giannis, yeah, okay. I'm going to ride the Bucks too. Like I said, sad to say as a Bulls fan, but we're going to move on. Jazz and Mavs series is up next. Now, I got a very high interest into this series. Like I said, I got the Mavs going to the finals. Another just a disappointing game, just a disappointing team, really. The Jazz, like, just, yeah, might be the disappointing team in the playoffs. They got their full squad, and they just getting bullied by Jalen Brunson and Dan Whitty. And it's really the same thing every year. As good as Gobert is on defense, he's getting exposed in the playoffs every time. Teams stretch him out, and it just gives a runway for guys on the perimeter just to attack the Jazz guards who plays no defense. Like, D. Mitch is like, he don't try. Mike Conley, he's, you know, too small. He doesn't try. Is Royce O'Neal's your second best defender, and he's decent. Like, he got a couple early votes for defense player of the year, but still, it's like Brunson sees these guys as food. 31 and 41 in back-to-back games. It's not looking good for the Jazz right now.
Yeah, no. And I feel like we're watching the demise of the Jazz as a franchise, because you have these two all-star players in Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, and you can't do nothing with that. You brought in Mike Conley, and it hasn't worked out. I feel like Donovan Mitchell has to leave.
Yeah, no, it's about time for them guys. They need to break the team up for real. And it's just, like I said, it's every time. And I think what really just started just to mess things up, like, initially for this team is just, like, how do all these rumors come out about Quinn Snyder going to the Lakers, like, before the playoffs even start? Like, how is that even a thing?
Yeah, no, I'm not sure neither, but it's just one of those things to where the front office impacts the on-court game, to where if you're having trouble in the front office perspective, that's where the trouble lingers down onto the court, and you're seeing a prime example of this year.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit. Like I said, I think I got Mavs can go into the finals. You said it's a possibility, but if let's say Luka stays healthy, you get these Jalen Brunson that you've been seeing, how far do you think the Mavs can go? Like, if you had to pick the Mavs or the field, where would you lie on that right now?
Between the Mavs and the field, I'm still taking the field. I feel like Phoenix can do something, given if they do get past this Pelican series. I feel like they can do something if they wind up matching up with the Mavericks. I feel like they can get through within six games, five or six, give or take, but I feel like the Mavericks they just got the lucky storm of where they're seated at.
Okay. All right. I respect it. We'll definitely see where that one goes, but it's just another disappointing loss for the Jazz, and it's time to break it up. It's time to break it up, but we're going to move on to next series. So I got this in the notes as Hawks and Heat, Raptors and Sixers, because I think Heat and Sixers are clearly going to move on. So just an early prediction about where you think that series go. Is there a team that you want to lean on? How are you feeling with that?
Honestly, I'm feeling towards the Sixers if it comes down to a Heat Sixers series.
Okay. I think I'm definitely leaning with you. I think with the Heat, they definitely kicked it up a notch. Like, they had the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows in the season. Personally, I think they was ducking the smoke from the Nets when they found out that Kyrie was going to be back. and start, you know, blowing little games here and there. But they kicked it up a notch for the playoffs. And if you're going to have games where Tyler Hero is going to go off, Duncan Robinson is going to go off, Vincent, he's going to play, you know, he's going to be a pivotal role player, and he's going to hoop. PJ Tucker, he's going to do what he's going to do. It's a series.
My only concern with Philly and Nets throughout this entire playoffs, I feel like Philly is the only team in this entire playoffs that can beat themselves. I feel like the world is actually theirs. I think the only way Philadelphia loses in any against any team is the fact that they beat themselves, not so much that they lost to the better team.
Yeah. I mean, definitely from last season, you just completely melted down. But this season, it's going to be interesting to see the dynamic and relationship with James Harden and Embiid when they're in the tough series, when there's pressure on, when Doc Rivers, what he's going to do. Is Tobias Harris, he's going to show up. Can you get the same production from Maxi? It's going to be like the bench can low-key be a problem at times, getting production from there, but I think I'm still going to lean with the Sixers just because I do think – I'm not going to lie, James Harden looks washed. he looks washed. I think he's pretty – he's not going to be the James Harden that we were seeing in 30-point trip dubs. It was nothing, but he's going to be a great playmaker. But I just worry with this team with pressure, what's going to happen. And with a team like Miami, who's used to pressure – Jimmy Butler thrives in pressure. Eric Spoelstra, amazing coach. It's going to make for a great series for sure.
Yeah. I feel like with James Harden, we haven't got the James Harden experience yet.
Yeah.
Playoff-wise, I feel like throughout the season, we had it to where he's hot, and then he goes on his cold streak, and it's like, bro, what the fuck? But we haven't had playoff Harden to where – we see James Harden as like that guy. I feel like during those times where it got close, we had those stretches where he deferred to Embiid, and rightfully so. It's no knock. Like, that's what you should do. That's the whole point of having him there.
Yeah.
But I feel like once James Harden takes over a game, we're really going to see like Philly is fucking scary.
For sure. If this team just something drastic happened, or even they just lose to a team, do you keep the same team, or are there changes that needs to be made? How you feel about that?
I feel like these guys just ride it out. I think everything is just there. You just probably got to do like one or two smaller tweaks, smaller adjustments, but ultimately everything you have is right there. It's all a matter of just execution.
Yeah, and then hopefully, James Harden's going to want to stay. He's not going to want to, self-sabotage and go to another team and just keep running and trying. And next thing you know, he's going to end up on the Warriors or something. Hopefully not, but.
Yeah, no, we can't have Harden being passed around.
No, yeah, please don't get passed around out here. They're going to be talking bad about you in the streets.
Already passed around by rappers, so can't be passed
around. Yeah, so last series, I think that's up. Pelicans and Suns. Now, they play tonight. They're going to be without Devin Booker, who's suffering that hamstring injury in game two. I'm not going to lie, this series kind of flipped for me with that injury. I maybe just be living in the moment with the Pelicans right now, but just like how great they just been playing, especially like in the play-in in game two, it's a different team with CJ.
Well, yeah, we seen it off rip too.
Yeah, it's like it works for them. Like he just fits right in. He's having some of his best scoring games, best scoring stretches. And I just think if you can get good play, consistent play from Jackson Hayes, Alvarado, Trey Murphy, Nance Jr., and then still just get that high level production from BI and CJ. I don't want to get too over emotional with this, but it flipped with me with that Devin Booker injury.
Yeah, and especially off the fact that we're finally seeing Brandon Ingram be Brandon Ingram on a big stage like this.
Man, But it's beautiful to see.
It's beautiful because I've been with Ingram day one since he was a Laker, and like watching him play in person, I was like, he's that guy. And I'm glad that he has the time and opportunity right now to be that guy for real. I think they can steal another game off Phoenix. I honestly think so. Whether if it's this game or within the next game, that's give or take. But I feel like they can steal another. They can get another one off of Phoenix, make it a series.
Make it interesting.
Make it interesting. Go to six games. Put some pressure on Phoenix early so that way they don't get too comfortable.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. I don't want to be too emotional, but I love this Pelicans teams now. And they just play so hard. Like Larry Nance, the way he fights on the boards, Trey Murphy, he's hitting shots and he's not scared to take the shots either. And I love that about them. It just seems like the Suns, they still got that stench on them for me. Like they play great this season. Number one team, obviously. That run last year, it still got a little stench. Like you played a lot of teams without their best players, a couple of their best players. You didn't have to play against Kawhi. Obviously, you went against the Nuggets without MPJ got hurt in that series, and then Jamal Murray still not playing. AD got injured. Like you had a great run. You had a great luck of a run. They got some stench on them to me. I'm not gonna lie.
I don't know, because I feel like Phoenix can make a deep run still. And that's just part of it, given that Devin Booker's a straight assassin. You have Chris Paul. I feel like they can repeat. They have all their guys pretty much from last year as well. So they can make that run and contend with almost any team. It's just whether they can get by them or not. But I feel like they're actual for real. I don't think we're getting the Utah Jazz vibe to where they just caught the lucky wind off everything, but okay. No, I feel like the Suns are here for a minute, given if they can keep up with the roster.
Okay. All right. Well, so let's say the series get interesting.
Right.
Is there any way that you play around with bringing Zion back, seeing what he can do?
No, because you haven't played all season. It's different if you played earlier in the season and you're out and it's like, okay, you come back, but you haven't played at all. So if you're going to be out, then be out. Like, we can come back, run it back again next season, but no, I wouldn't risk it.
Should he want to stay with this team, or should he still be trying to get out of there?
On court-wise, I would want him to stay, but I feel like it's something deeper than the game. I feel like it's more of an organizational thing, where that's where the beef lies. So if you're unable to get with the front office and like mesh with that, by all means, go do what you gotta do and get out of there, especially early as you can. But if it's an on-court thing, there's something that they can give you to make sure that you stay in New Orleans.
Okay. Yeah. I think, like I said, I'm growing for this. This Pelicans team's growing on me. I think with CJ showing what he can do with this team, B.I. becoming a better player in his own right, becoming more sound in what he can do. You bring back Zion, this can be a force of a team next year. If everything goes right, keep bringing in these pieces. Like you drafted good. Jackson Hayes is a great piece. You just keep bringing in good players and then just see where it goes.
To be honest, I feel like they're a big man away. And I understand they got Stephen Adams, but a mobile big man that can play that 4-5, that can spread out a little bit to give Zion some space.
Definitely need that.
And I feel like they're missing a true point guard. But you know who that point guard that they needed is?
Who?
Lonzo Ball, they also gave up.
Who's now in the Bulls and hasn't – just we need him right now, too. It's just – everybody need Lonzo. Lakers could use Lonzo. Nets can use Lonzo. Everyone can use Lonzo right now, but he's not available.
It is sad because we've seen the growth of Lonzo, especially this year, early in the year. He was killing it for the Bulls. We've seen him getting his jump shot improving defensively. He was looking great. He's being that true point guard. He knows his role. You need that type of player on a high level, especially like that.
Yeah, for sure. So. Love having you on. Just going to talk real quick and then I'm going to let you go because NBA Awards is still out. We still got some more to go. And we already got Defensive Player of the Year, Marcus Smart. He won it. First guard to win it since Gary Payton. Shout out to him. How's you feeling for the rest of these awards? You want to just, you know, just pick one. We can just go from there.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. I had Mikal Bridges as Defensive Player of the Year, but I'm not mad at Marcus Smart winning it because they do need perimeter guys more respect. And I'm glad that they're doing that by giving Marcus Smart that award because it's not easy being a guard, guarding 1 through 3, potentially 1 through 4 that Marcus Smart and Mikal Bridges does. Moving forward to most improved player, I have Darius Garland. More so for the fact of, I don't want to go through like the whole narrative thing, but just expectations of it. I feel like you look at it, long run, yes, he's a first-round pick. He's doing what a first-round pick should have did. But between the – looking, you look at the roster, they have Okoro, they have Sexton, and you have Garland. You have three guards that you drafted in the first round. One of them has to leave. One of them was going to be that top guy. So I feel like him stepping up is major. There's no knock to Jaws, no knock to DeJounte Murray. Sneaky pick was I had also was Miles Bridges, most improved player. But with Jordan Poole, I see why. This guy was barely in the league a year or two ago. Seeing where he is now, being pretty much starting over Steph, I see where that can go. As far as coach of the year, I do have Monty Williams. I feel like he should have got it last year.
Yeah.
But him not getting it last year, they had to make up for it this year, especially that they ran it back and pretty much been on top of the league since day one.
Yeah, I mean, it's really only right for him, really.
Only right. For rookie of the year, I got Evan Mobley. His impact on both ends of the floor so early is crazy because you can make the same case with Scottie Barnes being that two-way player as well and the given success of both teams. But I think if you look at it from a statistical standpoint, of course, you're probably going to say Cade Cunningham, number one overall pick. He's doing his thing. And there's no knock to that at all. But overall, that goes to Evan Mobley. He's been a top rookie this year. He's a future MVP defensive player of the year, like Giannis.
Yeah.
Only what I'm missing so far is six man a year. Six man a year.
Yeah, six man.
Six man, I feel like it's obvious. Yeah, I give it to Tyler Hero. Yeah. He's been A1 since day one. That's been the man. That's his award. And Miami, you might as well just hang a banner because that might be the only award you get this year. And then last but not least, MVP. Yep. It's going to Joel Hans-Embiid.
Ooh.
Yes, that man is Allen Iverson and Wilt Chamberlain's body.
Jeez.
And that's 100% fact. I feel like last year, okay, you gave it to Jokic. Makes sense. Technically, Jokic, he did better this year than last year. I get it. But Embiid, he's been the man. Leading the league in scoring as a center, first person to do that since Shaq. That's already one thing. Another thing, he could have made an easy case for Defensive Player of the Year again this year as well. Yeah. So I feel like nobody's gave him credit for that. He's pretty much doing everything top to bottom. Give it to Embiid. That way you have Giannis, Jokic, and Embiid at least all having one. And then the rest, you just jump ball with it. But you have to give those three guys at least one MVP in their careers.
Yeah, no, I like your picks. I think you got some really good picks. Definitely good reasons why. I think, and we definitely got a lot of them similar. Like, okay, so starting with Defensive Player of the Year, I would have been mad with Rudy Gobert. Would have been mad, would have been pissed, because I'm tired of seeing Rudy Gobert. Marcus Smart or Mikal Bridges, I would have been fine with either one of them. I think with Marcus Smart, with him, just the heart and soul on the defense that he is, and then the Celtics being the number one defense in the league, like just what the turnaround that has been, like it has been too, it just plays all into that. So I'm not mad with the Marcus Smart pick. Most improved player, I think it's an absolute travesty that Jordan Poole was not in the final three. I just think it's crazy. It's this guy, like you said, was in the G League, wasn't even, he didn't have these expectations these other guys is. He didn't have John Morant definitely shouldn't even be on this list. I don't even know why he's on this list. He was the second overall pick. Like, you shouldn't be on this list. DeJounte Murray, I definitely like him. You know, I got a little stock in the Spurs still from my Kawhi days. You know, love me some Kawhi. So, you know, love me some DeJounte Murray. But Jordan Poole not being on this, I will go with Garland. Just because of what he's did, the expectations for the team. He turned it around, him and Evan Mobley. And so just, you know, staying with that, Evan Mobley also got him for Rookie of the Year. I think people have been trying to slight him and, you know, just say it's, you know, really just a race between Cade and Scottie. But Scottie has been good definitely on both ends. Cade, you know, he started late, but he's picked it up and he closed out the season real strong. But what Evan Mobley has done defensively for this team, and that being a big reason why they had the turnaround they did along with Darius Garland, I think it's only right that you can give that to Evan Mobley, because it's not like he fell off either. Like, yeah, he had his up and down the season, all the rookies did, but he was a steady contributor. He played great, and I just don't think, you know, he should be penalized for any of that.
Yeah, no. He's probably been the most consistent rookie.
Consistent, yeah, for sure. Where else are we on? Coach of the Year, like, we agree on that. Monty Williams, it's only right that you give it to him, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that. Sixth Man of the Year, another one. Automatically Tyler Hero. Just really don't – it shouldn't have been a category. It should have just been Tyler Hero's award. Just give it to him already. We already know it should be him. Like, the stats alone prove it. Number one team, give it to Tyler Hero. Lastly, MVP. This is going to be where we differ, because I'm not going to lie, I'm on the Jokic bandwagon.
It's hard not to.
I'm on the bandwagon because just what he does – and like you said, his stats, they have been better. His PR speaks for itself. It was number one last season. I think it's number one again this season, if I'm not mistaken. Just what he does for this team and having to be without Michael Porter Jr., without Jamal Murray, it's just, I don't want to. And the one thing I liked about the MVP race this season, I think this was the first season really that it was as fluid as it was. Like, you had DeRozan, he was getting his MVPs, looks, Chris Paul, Giannis, you know, at one point, Kevin Durant. Like, everything's just been up and down. Ja Morant, Steph Curry. It's been a very fluid MVP season, and I think it just came down to, you know, who, you know, performed well to close out. And Joel Embiid, he did snag that scoring award, but I think I'm just going to go with the – just a narrative piece on this. I'm gonna be that guy. I'm gonna take the narrative piece and just say, you know, Jokic, he played without so much and just still had them as competitive as he did this season. I hats off to him. And it's not like his stats got bad, like they got better.
Yeah, it's one of those things because I can't make an argument on why Jokic shouldn't be MVP just without saying somebody else should be MVP. Like, it's a legit reason why if Jokic doesn't win it, that other person who might win it just had a slightly better season. Like, is no not, because you have a guy that's 7 feet, 300 pounds, damn near, and he's really moving like a big guard. He's moving like Magic Johnson out there. Like, the passes he's able to make, those, even just from the post, from the double team, from the high post, he's catching off the glass. He's going full court, passing it. Like, this guy really could, like, I don't want to say Steve Nash, because he has the numbers to Steve Nash, but go back to back. Like,
yeah,
there's no argument against why he shouldn't win MVP if you go that route. I'm comfortable with Jokic winning, even though I'm Team Embiid, but I feel like you can't really make a mistake on this award if it goes to either Giannis, Jokic, or Embiid.
Yeah, no, and I really like your point of, you know, we had Giannis, obviously, we had him before. Jokic got his last season. Let's keep the trend going. We can still give it to a big man. Give it to Embiid. This is his time. You know, he hooped out the end of the season, snagged that scoring title. Like I said, I wouldn't be mad if he got it either. So I think it's all, these are all pretty, you know, solid, other than most improved player, which was an absolute travesty of a, you know, category this year. But everything else been smooth.
Yeah, I feel like they're doing this. Obviously, you want to acknowledge Ja Morant's season because it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Yeah. We can't ignore it. It's nothing against Ja, but it's like it has to be a different award. And obviously you don't want to create just award for shits and giggles because you don't want to devalue it. But he's doing what a number two pick should be doing at third year three, year four. So I don't know. But most improved just shouldn't have been that award for him. Just give him All-NBA honors. Give him All-Star honors. And let's call it a day if you're not going to give him MVP.
Yeah. Nah, for sure. And you know what? I forgot to include this. A coach name I really want to go out there and give, you know, show some respect to. Celtics coach Ime Udoka. I think the turnaround to be this is first, you know, head coaching job. The turnaround, they play bad, they double with the should we split up Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown? He double all that, and the turnaround to get them to where they is, that is the number two seed, best defense in the league. He got Jason Tatum looking like an absolute superstar. He got these guys playing so well. Robert Williams, the growth and, you know, level of improvement under him, it all takes notice. And I think he definitely should have got some more respect. And I think he should have been a top three finalist.
Yeah, for sure. And you see that. So, like, him being his assistant in Philly, you're able to see what he's able to carry over, because the defensive presence that Udoka brought to Philly, now that's missing. But now you have that in Boston, especially as the head chair. You got Marcus Smart. You see where defensive player of the year, the proof is in his pudding. You have those anchor guys like Robert Williams. You have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, those two-way players, to where now you see where his ideals are evolution or evolving their games. So I love it. I love it. I wouldn't mind giving him coach of the year honors as well. And you're, and to your point, you're right. Like, he should at least been nominated or been at least in that top three finalists.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. But hey, I'm so glad we was able to do this today. It's been real fun having you on. Like I said, definitely want to have you on some more as these playoffs go. And then, you know, NFL draft coming up too. So a lot of good things happening in the sports.
Yes, it's perfect time of year. We got baseball, we got basketball, we got hockey, we got everything going on. Kentucky Derby, F1. It's the best time of year right now. But we definitely got a lot of hot topics. I look forward to coming back and make sure y'all stay tuned.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. You got any good plans this weekend?
Hey, we're going to watch these games and get right.
Yeah, that sounds about right for me. I might. It's a couple movies out there I want to go see if I got some time. That's pretty much about it, though. That's pretty much going to wrap it up for me. Just, you know, drinks, games, and maybe a couple movies.
Hey, if you haven't watched Batman yet, definitely watch Batman. They dropped it on HBO.
Yes.
As a person that doesn't like Batman, I would say this movie made me a fan.
Ooh, okay. I'm talking about Batman later on the pod. Definitely listen to it when you got some time, because I got some strong feelings on it. It's gonna be real interesting, but I want to save that for the fans later down the road. But Xavier, thank you for being on. Love having you on. And you're definitely gonna have you back on again sometime soon. Sooner rather than later.
No, for sure. Appreciate you having me on here. Definitely pleasure.
All right, man. Talk to you later. You guys stay tuned. When we come back, I'm going to be talking Thor, Love and Thunder, instant reactions with my man, Sean. So you guys stay tuned for that after the break.
These hands were once used for battle. Now they're but humble tools for peace. I need to figure out exactly who I am. I want to choose my own path. Live in the moment. My superheroing days are over.
All right, guys, welcome back. I got my boy Sean Art on, Mr. Old Man, here to talk Thor reaction trailer and some more fan. What's going on, Sean?
Nothing much, man. How's it going, man?
It's chilling, man. You know, nice Friday. Got some NBA playoffs going on, so we'll be, you know, watching that.
Bet. But you know what I'm here for.
Oh, yeah. All right, now, before we get into the trailer, I wanted to talk real quick about Moon Knight. Now, potential spoilers ahead, guys. If you haven't seen it yet, come back to this part. Skip ahead just the reactions from Thor. But Sean, You posted on a book, I'm done with Moon Knight.
Correct.
Go ahead.
I want you to finish. Okay. No, I don't want you to finish. Go ahead.
I immediately responded, you old heads got no patience. How can you not be entertained by it? I just want to know, man, what's the issue? Because honestly, I think it's good so far. I'm enjoying it, but I'm going to let you go on your rant and just let you go at it.
Okay. Okay. Coming from this old dude, this is what I feel. Six episodes, right? Is it six episodes?
Six episodes.
And where they already showed, what, four?
Four.
Or five?
We don't know four for them.
That's more than halfway through. And to me, I don't still have no clear line of sight of what's supposed to be going on. They spinning their wheels. Disney has a formula where they spin their wheels to the last two episodes and try to spill everything out and try to, you know, close everything up in the last episode. And that doesn't work for me. It's a bad formula. It just and you can vouch for me on this. I was on board the first two episodes.
You was on board. You was hype after that first episode.
I was hype. And
was
then
on the phone. We was talking about it.
And then the Moon Knight almost came a secondary character in his own series. And then it's all about, you know, the two personalities, you know, bidding for, you know, bidding to be the person to control, well, Moon Knight. See, I'm gonna be honest. I jumped off. I got off board. I say about the third or fourth episode. I didn't even finish the fourth episode because I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, maybe I'll after it's all said and done, I will need to go back
and watch it.
I will. Maybe I was, you know, in a place where I really wasn't really ready to receive it, and I didn't really take it in. But the third episode, when it came on. And he was fighting the dude with the knives. I'm saying, okay, whatever. You know, we're gonna see something that's different. You know, I don't know if I'm being like narrow-minded on it or whatever, but the Disney series shows all that they drag things out too long, and then they wait for the last one or two episodes to try to, you know, give you all the meat. And I think I don't think they're doing a good job of, you know, closing all their series, you know, their, you know, Disney Plus series that in that fashion. I think they need to, you know, give people more if you're going to have a limited series like that early instead of trying to, oh, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? They did the same thing with WandaVision, drug it out to the last episode, you know?
There's stuff going on.
Just say, but let's be real. You can really edit a lot of this stuff out. And
WandaVision could have been a movie.
Yeah.
WandaVision could have been, was one of those, could have been a movie. Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Loki definitely better served as series. This one, I see what it could have definitely could have been in that realm of this could have been a movie. But like I said, I like it. I'm enjoying the mystery of finding out of who actually the character is between Mark and Steven. And I think we're coming to a revelation in the next episode where in the room, well, you say you haven't finished watching the episode, but he's going to be in the episode. He gets shots and now he's in the room.
Spoil away because I'm really like.
So like when he gets shot and when they're trying to get away from Harrow, which I really love Harrow because played by Ethan Hawke, because he embodies the best Marvel villains, which are the ones that think they are right and are truly believe what they're selling to us, kind of like a Thanos. And those are the most scariest ones because they can pull any type of shit. But he kills Mark and Steven. And then Mark is transported into a room. Now this room is, you know, all white. He's clearly in like some little mental institution. And you kind of get the inference that this is now he's in his mind because he's Mark when he's in talking to the therapist, which is Ethan Hawke again, Harold, but he's like, this, you know, he looks different. He's this therapist. And now you're getting like, oh, you know, has this all just been fake or just in his head? So I think it's a really cool mystery that Marvel, you know, that they're doing. And I think it is different. You know, everyone always scream, let's do something different. And this is different. I think people are just, And to the complaint of, oh, we need more Moon Knight, I just think, like, you say you want different. This is a different thing that Marvel's giving you. It's a different dynamic relationship between Mark and Steven and Layla and how that little threesome is going on. But y'all, everyone just wants Moon Knight. And that's basically saying, we just want to see Moon Knight fight people. Basically the same thing, right?
So basically, I'm contradicting myself, right?
You're contradicting yourself.
No, I get what you, I get where you're going with this, but I'm saying, I'm not saying I don't want different. I'm just saying the execution is kind of not on par. It's not polished enough for me. I want different, but come on now, you got to give somebody some kind of you know, payoff more earlier than what they're doing. They're just limited payoffs.
The first two episodes was good. You didn't like the first two episodes?
I did like them, but it's like it keeps retreading in just different ways. You know what I'm saying? It's maybe, like I said,
give it a chance.
Before I be too harsh on it, I'm going to watch all six episodes, and I already know what's going on. I already got an idea what's going to happen. She's gonna become Moon Knight and
go ahead, get your takeoff.
Huh?
Go ahead, get your takeoff, your Moon Knight take. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know what Disney going, their blueprint. He's gonna be downgraded and she's gonna be Moon Knight somewhere in the series. And they're gonna give a
So for everyone that's listening, me and Sean right now, we got a bet that's going on that he thinks Layla is gonna end up being Moon Knight, which I don't believe, because I don't think Disney is just going to bring in Oscar Isaac just for him to not be the Moon Knight. So he thinks she's going to be Moon Knight at the end of the series. But I told him the conditions of this bet is, and we bet a trip of American Deli, 10-piece wings with the fries, the best wings and fries in town. We bet the conditions is, it can't just be some little, oh, she's Moon Knight just for a little bit, and then she gives the power back to Steven. She has to be permanently Moon Knight. Which I don't believe is going to happen. Sean does, right?
Well, yeah, and I'm taking your bet 100%, but this is what I'm saying. They're going to give the
conditions.
The conditions that moving forward, he's not going to be the major character by the end of the series. And wherever it lands, that's what I'm saying, but I'm taking your conditions. Because I'm so confident that it still may happen that way. But either way, he's not going to be the major character by the end of the series.
All right. We're going to see. We can, when the series is over, we can come back. We can do a more deeper dive into it. But now let's get to what we're really here for. We're going to get into Thor. So the trailer was awesome. Now, we don't get too much in the story, just kind of like a vibe and feel of the movie. The most notable thing to me at first was, and you know, thank God for this, Thor has gone back to slim. He done got some little keto diet. He done hit the gym, whatever. I'm sure we're gonna get some little funny little workout. He done did something, man. So you see in the
trailer, he's working out them big ass chains.
Yeah, I'm just saying we're gonna get like a little funny little workout montage, you know, sometime in the movie. And I can't wait for that, you know, the director, Taika Waititi. I think, you know, he's got something planned. You know, Ragnarok was a huge success. It basically just reinvented Thor, basically his character, into this more...
revitalized his whole character.
Right, because like after Dark Moon, it was like, you know.
Yeah, the Dark World was trash. It's probably the worst movie in the whole Marvel universe to me, cinematic universe.
And that's tough, because I love Thor. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, me too. And everybody was hating on the first one. I was saying, I like it. It was pretty straight. You know, it was very simple. But you know, they didn't really have a plan, because I saw somewhere that Kevin Feige said he really didn't have a plan. He was going to the success of every movie. He was building on that.
Right.
So he didn't really have a map. He just said, if it was successful, we keep going. And you know, then that's what all the movies did. They were successful, so he started building towards a cinematic universe. And that Thor movie was something just to, you know, just test the waters in it. And it worked for me, but they dropped the ball heavy on the second
one. Yeah, I really liked the first one. The second one definitely fell flat, but thank God for Taika Waititi. for you know, doing what he did, bringing more comical, you know, side of the door, you know, bringing that relationship between him and the whole, you know, the full light. It was cool to see. And then, you know,
and not even that, the artistic direction is just, it's just off the hook, you know.
It's all these colors and it's vibrant, and you know, that's what, you know, he's up in space, you know, living it up.
Yeah, and it shows that you don't have to be, you know, all dark in space and everybody look like demon elves or demons and stuff like right. that. People can look like, you know, just, you know, colorful people, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. So we got some Guardians in it, and you know, all the funny that's gonna come with them. We see Thor and Star-Lord trying to one up each other, continuing that little battle they got going on. So just in general, what are your instant reactions from it?
From the trailer?
Yeah.
When they first come on, I was like, yo, this is I liked it. I really like what they were putting out. And people gotta look at it from this perspective. You got taken the whole journey of Thor, not only from his movies, from all his appearances in the Marvel Universe. He has a journey. He was put out there to be a god, and he, and to be honest, I think he has the best realized, you know, journey in the whole cinematic universe, because he was put out on a high pedestal to be a god. He realized that he's flawed, and he come full circle that, you know, I can just be myself. I don't have to be to be that big dude, to be a god and stuff like that. And I really like that. I really like that they're showing that.
Yeah. I think, like I said, we don't get too much from the trailer, but I think it was, you know, it shows the vibe that we're going to get from the movie. It's going to be, you know, cool little, what we know already, and we're going to get into more of what we already know about the film and the movie. And we know, it's going to be like a little love story. It's, you know, it's titled Thor, Love and Thunder. So it's going to be a, you know, fun little experience. And if it's anything like what he did with Ragnarok, I think it's going to be a hit. And I think it's going to have some good consequences in it too. It's going to definitely shape the Marvel Universe as we know it and, you know, moving forward. So
go ahead. Yeah. And I think one thing I like about his, him as a director, he knows how to put, you know, comic book action in his movies and don't hold back on it. Because in the third movie, that's what I liked about it. It was comic book action. Because it's a comic book movie. He didn't take it seriously.
It looks like a comic book movie.
Right. Yeah. The colors are vivid. He just said, man, all the other movies trying to take it real in a realistic perspective. And it's a freaking make-believe.
It's a superhero movie. It's a superhero movie.
And that's what I like about it. You see Thor, he dressed down in this in the beginning. Then, you know, through shots of the trailer, you see he gets his upgraded, you know, Asgardian or God armor, whatever. It just the visuals to me, I'm a visual dude, and the visuals to me are off the hook.
The scene where he was like, him and Korg was like looking, and it's like this big, you know, monster in this, when it was like, you know, in the ice, some look like some type of Antarctic land, but you know, it's in space, so. That, you know, that scene, like you said, the visuals in it just look great.
It's almost flawless, man. I mean, what I've seen in this, I'm just going on the third movie as well.
Yeah.
It's flawless. It's like a continuation. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, definitely excited about it. But just moving on to what we know about the movie, because I told you when we talked last time, I did some reading for this movie, and what we know about the movie, the director, Taika Waititi, it is loosely based on the comic book run from Jason Aaron's run of Mighty Thor, where Jane takes the mantle of Thor after he becomes unworthy to Will Mjolnir. And like I said, I've been doing some reading, been doing my research, and if you want to go back and read those Marvel comics, I highly suggest you go download that Marvel. I think it's like the Marvel Comics Book app has everything you want on it. But in the comic books, the Watcher, he was influencing Nick Fury, and he told Thor that what the God Butcher said was right, and that the gods don't deserve us mortals, and they're unworthy of our admiration, and in the end, they'll kill them. Now, Gore's character in the movie, which is played by Christian Bale, is a I don't know if that's where they're gonna go, if they're gonna kind of adapt that storyline, because I'm curious to see where Thor's gonna feel like he's unworthy, if that's gonna be the case. And you know, Nick Fury character, he's currently off planet, so I just don't know how all that works. But just your thoughts on that?
I think they're mixing two or three Thor arcs together,
right?
But because Gore, what's his name? Gore the God Butcher.
Yeah,
yeah. I did a quick just a look up on him. You know, he has his own arc all on itself, and if that was really focusing on him alone, that whole movie would be about him and Thor. And what I've seen, or what I've, you know, looked up about him, that he is the truth, that Thor can't even beat this dude, you know?
Yeah.
So I would really don't think they're going to really focus on like him being the main plot. Like you said, the title Love and Thunder, you know?
It's a love story.
Yeah, he's not really, I'm not expecting him to be the end all be all like Hela, you know? And like you said, the Mighty Thor, and I think they, you know, movies have to, you know, chop it up and, you know, squash things down into a certain time frame. And I don't think Thor is not unworthy to wield Mjolnir. Excuse me if I mispronounced that. It was broken. So he knows it still was, you know, active all around till he probably found Jane and he said, okay, who did this? You know, who put the hammer back together? And I bet you, you know, my thoughts, I think Zeus did it. I don't know, you know, but it's going to be like two or three different things going on. But like I said, the title says it all. I don't really think, I'm not going in expecting, you know, him and Gore going at it for like 45 minutes.
You're right. You know, I mean, yeah, it's definitely, you know, he's going to play some role into it. But I think I got to take the throw at you. Well, I want to, you know, explain this for everyone that's listening. Something else that's, you know, that's going to be important to know about Jane's character, who's played by the lovely, beautiful Natalie Portman. Her character in the comics, she has cancer, and the movie will have a direct, you know, that's going to be a direct adaptation from it. She's also going to have cancer in the movie. So if it's going to be like from the comics, and they take that full adaptation of her becoming the Mighty Thor, she becomes Thor because as Thor, as he feels he is unworthy, Thor has no Thor. So she feels like she has to take up that mantle, and with cancer, it holds off her cancer, but every time that she does use it, it, you know, pushes the cancer on further. It gets worse. So that's important to know for everyone that's listening that's going to be coming about her character, because as she becomes Thor, and this is my take I want to throw at you. We know Valkyrie is back, and we know it's going to be a love story, like we've been saying. And from the comics, at the end of The Mighty Thor, her and Thor, Jane, don't get together. So what if this, as we know, Valkyrie is going to be coming out as the first LGBTQ superhero in the MCU, what if it's a love story between them?
Knowing the direction, I wouldn't even rule it out, because I really think Thor is about to take I don't think they sideline him, but I think he's about to, you know, step down, like literally step down out of the universe, a cinematic universe. I really do.
So I love Chris Hemsworth.
What's that, Chris Hemsworth? Yeah, he kills it. He kills it as Thor, and people really don't. I don't really hear a lot of people give him a lot of praise like they should. Everybody's always on Iron Man. This, I mean, come on, man. Chris Hemsworth and what's the dude to play Captain America?
Chris Evans.
Chris Evans kills it in the Marvel Cinematic. Both Chris's are pretty much, you know.
They've been holding it down. They've been holding it down for a while.
Holding it down, and everybody. Iron Man, this Iron Man, that it's because Iron Man is flamboyant and he has all this tech, and you know, but I can live without Iron Man. If there was no Iron Man ever again, I'd be like, cool. If Captain America came back, I'd be like, yo, I'm telling you, the Chris Evans Captain America, I'd be like, yo, I want to see that. But they say, oh, Iron Man come out, I say, okay, whatever, you know, but.
like I said, you know, Chris Hemsworth, he's killing it. But I think he's about to go out. I think it's going to be his swan song, and he's going to go out on a high note on this.
I hope not. You know, I think, I know he said, you know, he'll play the role as long as, you know, until they'll rip the suit off of him. So hopefully, you know, they got some more stuff that works for him. It's definitely going to be interesting with this new arc that we're going to be getting, especially after Multiverse of Madness, which is going to be coming out. But question for you, how much Guardians do you think we're going to get? Because we see the Guardians in a trailer, and, you know, we see them interacting. I don't think we're going to get too much of them. I think all that we see is going to be that we've seen the trailer was pretty much the beginning of the movie. Because that's kind of what Marvel... That's basically what Marvel been doing a lot lately. Everything, you know, trailer like Spider-Man, when we got that trailer, all that stuff, beginning of the movie.
Yeah, what are they called? The Ravengers? The Reavers? The Ravengers, whatever?
Their new name?
Yeah.
The Asgardians of the Galaxy.
Okay, yeah.
The Ravengers was Star-Lord then was with.
Yeah, and I thought they was calling themselves that, but I could be wrong. But I think they're going to drop them off. You know,
yeah,
and he's going to start his journey. But I think it's going to set up the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, which I've heard or which I've seen in like on YouTube, and I read that it's going to be really serious. It's going to be some death in that. It's going to be really, really. It's going to be the closing of the Guardians of the Galaxy as we know it in the third one. So they might, you know, set them off on that journey in that movie.
Okay, Sean, dropping some little stuff in. Okay. Yeah. So, all right, we talked about Gore the God Butcher. We know he's this crazy dude. You know, so what I know from Gore from the comics, he has this sword, the all black sword. It's a symbiote. Is, you know, very powerful. He can kill Celestials with it.
He's a symbiote god.
Yeah. It turns him to a badass, basically. What do you think his motive is going to be?
Well, I think they're going to take it directly from his comic book origin, that it's going to be, you know, he thinks gods are just wasted energy, you know, that they don't serve the purpose of man, and he want to just take it out, you know, just kill him because, you know, in the comics, I mean, this may be a spoiler, but, you know, his family, they pray to the gods, and gods, it falls on deaf ears, and his family gets killed.
Right.
And, you know, this is what I read. Two gods, he found two gods fighting. He found one that was halfway dead. And he said, the guy asked him to help him. And he was like, yo, you asked me to help you? Y'all don't ever help me. So he kills the guy and takes the sword. So I just think it's going to be based off of that he just want to kill gods because they are worthy. You know, they're up there with all their power, but they're really not doing anything. So I think he's just going to run through them, and they're just going to have an encounter with her. And I really think Thor and Jane are gonna, you know, come together to fight this dude. Cause like I said, in the comics, that dude is the truth. Thor can't even beat him. It took three Thors to beat him.
He's one of one. He's him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely agree with you. You know, from the comics, yeah, we know his motives. He prayed, didn't do anything for him. Basically, you know, he was like, I don't need you guys. I don't need you guys' help. I got some predictions to throw at you.
Okay.
I got some predictions. I want to get your takes. These are some of the predictions that have been going around the web a lot. And we're going to start with the first one. Gore will kill Zeus, who's going to be played by Russell Crowe. We're going to get a Zeus appearance, and he will be killed.
And you know what? I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna keep talking. I really think they're gonna sneak Hercules in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
That was my my next one. Hercules is gonna make an appearance. Next one, Gore will destroy New Asgard. So the opening shot of the trailer, we see that scene where Thor was walking through with his cape, and he's walking through the flames. A lot of people are speculating that Gore will have come through New Asgard, and he's gonna blow to hell, and that's gonna what's gonna start the battle.
Yeah, I think that's what's gonna make him pick up the axe again. What do we call that? What's his new weapon called?
Stormbreaker.
I think that's when I think he retires, and I think that's what's gonna make him pick up Stormbreaker again. Because you know, in the trailer, he left it. You know, he said he's done with all the superhero stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to make him get back into it and make him force him to do what he do best, you know?
Gotcha. All right. So this one I really like because I really love this character and I've been hoping that they finally be introduced into the MCU. This prediction is we will finally get Enchantress. Not the one, not Sylvie, not Sylvie from Loki. We're going to get another a real Enchantress in the series. What you think?
Maybe so. I think maybe so. I mean, because she is a key, one of the, you know, major characters in the Thor, you know, lore. She's basically, you know, in there a lot. So it doesn't make any sense not to get her before all the, you know, Thor arc wraps up. I think we should get her in a movie adaptation or something like that. So I can agree with that. I can get down with that.
Yeah, definitely. I hope we get her. You know, she's very pivotal to the Thor comics. You know, she's a part of a lot of his storyline. So it's about time that we finally get her in one of these Marvel movies. You know, we thought that was gonna be her, Sylvie, in the Loki series. But yeah, hopefully we get a real introduction to that character. All right, so that was all that we have on Thor. Actually, no, I got one last prediction. And this is kind of a tie-in to your hate for Moon Knight. People are speculating that we're going to see Gore at the end of Moon Knight, and he's going to kill one of these gods. Because we've been getting a small introduction to gods in the Moon Knight series so far.
OMG. Have we not learned anything from WandaVision?
We got Kang. We got Kang at the end of Loki. Kang.
The last episode.
The last episode. A little snippet.
We not learn anything from WandaVision. Ain't nothing pivotal gonna cross over in those series. I'm telling you, it ain't gonna happen. We're gonna get a female Moon Knight. That's what you get ready. That's gonna be.
All right, okay, Marvel hater. Let's go something that, you know, your DC love, your little DC fanboy. We're talking about a Batman because we've finally seen it. I've seen it a couple times. Go ahead. I just want you to express your thoughts on it now that you finally seen it.
I am a heavy fanboy when it comes to Batman, you know, and I'll go on record. Ben Affleck, he suffered from, I know I'm getting all subject, but I have to say this. Ben Affleck suffered from the same thing Andrew Garfield did, bad scripts. But both of those characters were the best realized version of Batman to me. Batman and Spider-Man. Oh, on to the real subject.
Stop the cap. Go ahead.
Okay. We sneak that cap in. But the Batman. 2022 Batman. You know, on the last podcast, I was so hyped. I was just jumping out of my seat ready for this. So I finally saw it. And like you said, I'm gonna give you a prop. You said it's gonna be something we all seen before, it's gonna do the same things, which it did, but not in Batman fashion, but in other movie fashions. If you're a 90s baby like me, you would have recognized the plot. It come from a movie called Seven with Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt.
You said 90s baby.
Yeah. Well, I'm a 90s baby. That's where I became a man and grew up and started getting my likes and dislikes. So I call myself a 90s baby. That's where all the good movies come out. All the good movies.
Oh, a 90s baby is somebody born in the 90s.
No. Okay, no. I'm an 80s baby. No. Okay, let me withdraw that. Let me be more technical.
Go ahead. You're 60s babies. Go ahead.
I love the 90s. The 90s was the best era to me. So it came from a movie, I think it came out in 1996, called Seven. And the blueprint is all there. If you saw that movie, you saw Seven all the way through it. Even the lighting, even the way he, communicated with the chief, same thing. But to judge the performance of Batman and the script and the plot, yeah, I was not really impressed. I'm just going to be honest. I'm just gonna be real.
Yeah. I told you how I feel. I said the movie was too long. I said it could have ended multiple times.
It was too damn long.
And
that was the major thing. It was too long.
So I went to go see it in theaters. Imagine me sitting in these theaters, cold. I'm watching this movie multiple times now. I'm just watching this thing. I thought about that
when I was like an hour and a half in. I said, Dre sit through this twice. I said, that's a strong dude. Because I would walk away.
Dude, the build up to uncovering Catwoman and Falcone's relationship, I thought that was it. Then, you know, we see the Riddler get arrested. Then we see the corny little Bruce. I'm just like, man, this movie is, it could have ended multiple times. They could have definitely slicked out about a good 20 minutes from Batman walking so damn slow everywhere. And I'm talking slow, creeping on Catwoman for like 10 minutes like a weirdo. I mean, I gave the movie a 7. I like Matt Reeves' adaptation of it. I like the introduction to the character.
I will give him this. He's on to something, but he just made it too damn long. And the ending was, I'm going to say it, the ending was so horrible. They had like 5 endings on that thing. You know what I'm saying?
We got these random ass Riddlers blowing up, flooding people. Now we got Batman saving them, coming out of the water.
You gotta back up for a second. Before you get to that, when he jumped on the thing and cut the... Okay, this is a spoiler if you haven't seen it. When he cut the cable on the teleprompter so it wouldn't fall and electrocute everybody in the water, that was a climatic scene on its own. You think the sound and the music's going, that he may die when he hit the ground.
Water, that dude just popped right back up, man.
We got 45 more minutes. Let's get it on. You know, let's get it cracking.
Man, like I said, overall, yeah, I give it a 7. But people was like, yo, best Batman. Like, yo, stop the cap, slow down.
It's the best Batman. And it's really, the reason why it's not the best Batman is not because of the universe and the realization of the character and the characters inside the movie. It's because of bad pacing.
Yeah.
And bad editing to me. It messed it all up. And we got to throw this in. Colin Farrell killed it.
Killed it as Penguin. That race scene, amazing. Cinema.
Oh, man. That movie should get an Oscar just for that. That's, I don't know. They give out like scene Oscars or whatever. But that was a badass scene. It really was.
For sure.
And his performance was just awesome, man.
And now he's getting his own spinoff series.
Yeah, I will watch it.
Great, man. Hey, man.
Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say we're running out of time, so we're gonna have to hop off. Definitely gonna bring you back on to talk some more about some of the fandom stuff. But really appreciate you coming on, and hey, definitely have some good talk.
Always a pleasure, man. Be easy, man. Be good.
All right, man. Have you on later.
Okay. All right. Later.
All right, guys, that is it for us on today's pod. Thank you guys for listening. As always, make sure you follow us on the socials at Player Circle on Twitter and Instagram. Y'all have a great weekend and enjoy these NBA playoffs. I am out.